My name is Jean Smy. I've kept bees for 30 years plus, and we moved to Essex in the 1970s, mid to late 1970s. Prior to that, we were in Kent, where I helped my brother with his bees in the Kent orchards.
So have you lived with bees all your life?
Not all my life, no. I became very excited about a bee when I was about 10 years, no, a bit younger than that, about 8 years old. I was a passionate reader from a very early age, and laying on the lawn at my parental home, this bee appeared on the grass and walked across the page of my book. I thought it was the most wonderful thing I'd ever seen. I didn't know, because I didn't know one bee from another at that age. I didn't know it was a bumblebee. But I had it crawl across my hand. I put out my hand and it walked onto it. And it was the start of a love affair. I couldn't know enough at that age. I just plagued my parents. My father was a countryman, and he would show me all sorts of stuff about insects and everything, from spiders and snakes and bugs and beetles, everything. And then I went on a school outing to Lullingston Castle, and in those days they had the silkworms there. And so I became really, really interested in insects per se. And as I grew older, I learned that there were these wonderful insects called honeybees, and talked about them non-stop.
So your brother kept bees?
Yes, I think through me plaguing him, really. But I didn't have the space, and he did. He stayed in Kent, and he had orchards all round him. And he kept bees, and I used to go and help him. And I kidded myself that I knew more than he did, because I'd read a book. And then he said to me one day, I think it's about time you really took on some bees of your own. And he said, I've got a glorious swarm. Come down and pick it up.
At this time, were you in Essex?
Yes, we were. We were living in Sandon at this point. And we drove from Sandon down to Kent to pick it up. And I thought I was a proper beekeeper, because we went off and bought a suit. So I had my book, my suit, and a smoker. What more could I need? I then got the bees. It's an interesting story about picking up the bees, actually. This was pre-Dartford Tunnel automation. And we'd got the bees in the back of the car. And my brother is well known for not paying attention to detail. And he was supposed to have strapped the colony up firmly. And we were approaching the Dartford Tunnel. And my brother said to me, I think it might be a good idea if we put our veils on. Why? Says I, in all innocence. And I turn round and look at the back of the car, and the window is covered in bees. And he hadn't strapped the hive together properly, and the brood box and the floor had slightly separated. And bees only need a quarter of an inch to escape. And escape they did, all in the back of the car. We approached the toll booth, and in those days, no electric windows, so we wound down the window. And the bees are getting this sniff of fresh air. The man puts out his hand to take the money just as this line of bees escapes out through the window. Poor man. I felt so sorry for him. And to my knowledge, he didn't get stung, but it must have been such a shock. We finally got home to Sandon, quite depleted of bees, left the hive in the back of the car with the bees on the window, and waited for the bees to go back in, which they did eventually. And then we placed them in the garden. I think it was about 3 o'clock in the morning before my brother left to go back home. And that winter, in spite of thinking that I knew everything, it taught me a salutary lesson because I didn't know anything. I'd read a book, but you can't read a book about creatures and think that you know it all. And I thought I'd fed them enough, and my poor bees died of starvation that winter.
Oh dear.
And these days they're fed so much they're positively obese when they go into the winter. But it was a good lesson, and I decided that the best thing to do was to go on a beekeeping course.
So it didn't put you off?
It didn't put me off. It made me sad that I had been so negligent and so arrogant, really, thinking that I knew what I knew and that was all I needed. And there is a saying with bees that bees never do things invariably. So you can read as many books as you like, and the bees will always find a way of thwarting you and do their own thing. And over the years, and all the teaching that I've done with beekeeping sessions, I have said to the students, you have to go with what the bees want to do. You may have them in that box and think, here are the bees, this is what I'm going to do with them. But the bees have their own agenda. They have survived on this planet for millions of years, with and without our help and in spite of, and they will do what they're going to do. And I've said, as a beekeeper, you have to learn to recognise the signs that the bees are giving you, and you have to go with it. And if they're going to swarm, you have to take remedial action. But you cannot say, I won't allow my bees to do this, that or the other, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. They will do their own thing.
So, Jean, you were in Sandon when you first started your own beekeeping. When did you actually move to Malton?
In 1994, we moved to Malton. At this time, I was County Secretary of the Essex Beekeepers, and I felt that I wanted to expand a little bit more. And we'd always loved Malden. We had really, we used to come to Malden on lots of day visits. And although we had a big garden where we were in Sandon, it didn't quite fit the bill. And we couldn't find the sort of place that we wanted in Malden. So we compromised. We lived in the town, and it soon got round that we had bees, you know, on a small plot. And before we knew it, farmers were knocking on the door and asking us to keep bees on their land. And in fact, we have got bees on farms now that we did have when we first started in 1994, thereabouts.
So do you look after the hives on the farms?
Oh, yes, yes.
The farmers don't offer to assist you in any way?
No. I've offered to loan them a bee suit, but they back away from that. No, I've got bees on farms and we manage them. Mm. We have to visit them every 9 days to make sure that everything is well, to give them enough space, to make sure that the honey boxes that we call supers are not over full and they're not cramped. You know, I have to nurture them. It's my responsibility. They're in the boxes. I put them in the boxes, in the hives. And, you know, it's for me to make sure that everything is right for them.
So how many hives have you got now at this present time in the area?
At this present time, probably approaching 40.
Have you?
40 colonies, yes, on various farms.
That keeps you busy.
It does. Yes, we're just coming into the busy season. The oilseed rape is coming into bloom. We tend to get honey from it later in this neck of the woods because we have the cold wind from the estuaries, which means that the ground takes longer to warm up. And if the ground is cold, the plants can't yield nectar. Mm. But the bees do so love the oilseed rape.
Do they?
Yes. Mm. It's high in glucose, so it's like, you know, when it finishes, it's like somebody coming along and taking away our plate of steak and chips.
And presumably that gives a good taste to the honey.
Not everybody likes it. Some beekeepers hate it because it sets so hard, so quickly. Mm. As far as I'm concerned, honey is honey, and all crops are good. Mm. The most popular one, I would say, with the bees in this neck of the woods, certainly for my bees, is the roadside crop, rose bay willow herb. A lot of my honey is from rose bay willow herb. Mm. And being in Morden, lucerne. The lucerne comes from the clover family, and we're so lucky in that it's cut just twice a year. It comes into bloom two or three times a year, and it's in that particular field, any particular field, for about 3 years. Mm. So if you're lucky enough to have bees on it, but it needs the right weather conditions.
So you presumably choose the location of your hives, where you want to put your hives, according to the crops that are grown or the flowers that are there?
No, I keep them on the same farms. I don't like moving bees around. It's some people do, and that's fine. Mm. Some people move bees onto the heather or down to Kent, the orchards. I find that too much hard work. Mm. And it's very stressful for the bees to travel in the back of a car for any distance. So, in actuality, I found that where I've got my bees, the farmer then says to me, on two farms, he said, old Mr. Holmes used to keep bees right where you've got yours now. And, of course, I wouldn't have known that. But it's obviously a good beekeeping spot.
Can you tell me a little bit about extracting honey? You've got over 40 hives.
Mm.
So how on earth do you manage all the honey extraction?
It is hard work, and I'm lucky to have a husband with muscle.
Oh. Yeah.
We tend, when it's the honey season, we tend to visit the colonies every day. And we will go to one apiary per day. And we'll go out early in the morning. 6 o'clock is not unusual. It's nice to beat the sun. Mm. And we would take the boxes of honey back, replacing them with empty boxes. That is the hardest part, in actual fact. Take them all to the extracting room, to the honey house, and we will then take off the honey.
What's the extracting room? What's that?
The extracting room is where there is an extractor, which is a thing like a large oil drum, almost. It has spokes in it. The frames fit into these spokes, and we switch it on, and in theory, the honey spins out. It doesn't spin out if it's oilseed rape. It takes some encouragement. The honey is then put into food containers and then put into storage.
Mm. Mm. So do you put the honey in jars fairly quickly and then it's all...
No.
How does it work?
No. The extracting of the honey, it's several processes. When we get the frame, we have to cut off the wax from the cells. The cells contain the honey, the nectar. And we have to cut off the wax from the front of that. The wax goes into a separate container, and the honey, the frame with the honey on, goes into the extractor. I would normally at this stage have a picture to show you. You need to have I need to plant that picture.
Visual.
Yes. And the honey is spun off. It goes through a coarse filter. It goes into a food container, which will hold about 32, 33 pounds of honey. And it then goes into storage. Whilst it's in storage, it will start to set. Mm. The larger crystals go to the top. I scoop off those large crystals and I will use them in cooking or making marmalade. The food container is then gently heated. If I'm preparing honey for soft set honey, which a lot of customers like, it stays on the toast easier, the honey would be gently warmed at a temperature no higher than the hive temperature. And it's then pounded with a thing like a potato masher and then settled for a day and then it's bottled. If I'm using it for clear honey, it will be heated again to a temperature no higher than the hive temperature, but still almost pasteurized. And people like clear honey. They like to use it for cooking. They put it in their tea. They put it on their rice pudding and on their porridge. It's our most popular seller, the clear honey. And it would last about 3 months in the jar without granulating. So that's basically the difference. And the other difference is that as it goes through the season, the honey will change in colour depending on what the bees are actually foraging on. And the honey with the strongest flavour will be the darker honey. Light honey doesn't have a great deal of flavour. And we tend not to blend our honeys. We like to think of it like a good wine, where we know that this is blackberry, we know that this is oilseed rape, and we do write on the buckets, it has to be traceable, where they come from.
Is it just the two of you
Yes.
doing all this?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
And all this equipment is at your own home?
Well, we do have a unit where do various bits and pieces.
Yeah.
We tend to get a bit grumpy with each other at this time of year when we're taking
a walk. Yes. So how long does this very busy period last?
The oilseed rape will start to come off round about June time. And we do have quite a late season over here in Morden, which is mixed blessings, really. We could be taking off honey as late as September. In other parts of the county, it finishes a lot earlier, but it's later here because we have the lucerne, which means that we can't put any treatments on our hives all the time there's forage on there, all the time there's honey on there. And ideally, we should treat our hives, our bees, around about August time. So we have to hope that they survive through that time without getting viruses and things.
So you don't take summer holidays?
I can't remember when we last did, actually. Probably when we lived in Kent. Yeah. No, we don't.
So how long have you been doing this in the Malden area? When did you...
25 years we've been in it.
25 years
Yes.
you've been doing this?
Yes, in fact, this year, yes.
And during that time, you said you've been running the Essex Beekeepers, or...?
Yes, when we came to Kent, when we came from Kent... we lived in Stock for a little while and then we moved to Sandon. And I took on the role of county secretary. We had 1,000 members at that time. As a lot of beekeepers became embroiled in all sorts of stuff and became the honey show secretary and this secretary and that secretary. And this is where I said to my husband, you know, if you did what I do, I wouldn't put up with it. Got terribly involved with all sorts of stuff. And when we moved to Morden, as I said earlier, the whole thing expanded. You know, it grew like Topsy and everything just went berserk. And we are where we are now, really. We've given up a lot of committee work, both of us. I edited the Essex Beekeeper for 5 years and my husband then took it on, became the disease inspector.
So as a disease inspector, was that yourself or your husband?
It was me.
What did you have to do for that?
I was asked by MAF, as they were then, to take on the role for the summer, and because they were short-staffed. And for the summer, I would go round wherever they wanted me to go, inspecting other people's colonies, looking for disease.
Mm.
Lovely role, very interesting. Mm. Loved every minute. Mm. It's always interesting to see how other people keep their bees. And it makes you quite humble. You think, why haven't I thought of that? But what suits one person doesn't necessarily suit another.
Mm. And did you come across disease occasionally?
Came across some interesting things, yes.
Mm.
Yes, did occasionally come across disease.
And how do you think nowadays the health of bees is generally?
Now you're putting me on the spot, aren't you? I think the bees would benefit from a greater variety of crops. I think currently we have too many beekeepers. The Bumblebee Society are concerned that there's too much competition with the forage, and I think that we've got beekeepers who, with the best of intentions, want to do their bit to help save the bee. But that in itself can be a difficult situation because you've got too much competition out there. A very experienced beekeeper said to me not so long ago, he said, wherever I stand on my land, he said, I can look around me and know that within a quarter of a mile there is a beekeeper with one or two colonies. And beekeepers, commercial beekeepers or serious beekeepers, wouldn't necessarily want to put their bees where other beekeepers are, for the obvious reasons. So it is difficult. I can understand their enthusiasm, and I think it is all done with the best of intentions.
I suppose it must be encouraging that there are so many people wanting to keep bees.
It is encouraging, and I think it's encouraging that they're getting information. When I first started keeping bees, to try and get some of the older beekeepers, when I say older, I mean more established beekeepers, to impart information, was like trying to get blood out of a stone. And that was really why I became so involved, because my thoughts were, if I have the knowledge, I would tell anybody.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of teaching, haven't you?
Yes.
Of new and young beekeepers.
Yes.
Is that locally?
Yes. I did it for 19 years. When we lived in Chelmsford or in Sandon, I belonged to Chelmsford Division. Then I moved to Morden. I was secretary of Morden Division for a while, and I used to do the teaching there. Yes, I mean, as I say, for 19 years I taught beekeepers.
Sort of, it was an introduction to beekeeping and...
I did a theory course with them, following the BBKA, the British Beekeepers Regulations. I did a beekeeping theory course with them for 6 weeks, and then they would come to my own apiary and I would teach them the practical. And then if they needed help, I would mentor them. Because when we first moved to Morden, the division consisted of, I think it was about 11 beekeepers. Now we can't move in Morden for beekeepers. I felt very, very honoured, although I did belong to Morden Division, I felt very honoured that I was given an honorary county life membership of the Essex Beekeepers. And so I belong to any division now. I'm not tied to any particular division.
That's lovely. Jean, when did the Essex Beekeepers Association start?
Well, that was in 1880.
1880?
1880. 14th of July, to be precise. And it was just in 1874 that the British Beekeepers Association started. This all came about because it was felt that there were so many beekeepers out there, cottager beekeepers, as they used to be called, that could do with some form of cohesive help and encouragement, and it would be good to be supportive. And there was a very proactive clergyman from Haseley. He was a clergyman of Haseley, and he was the Reverend Rayner. And he and some others got together in Chelmsford and felt that it might be a good thing to have an Essex Beekeepers Association. And that's where it started. There were many beekeepers all over the county, and they weren't getting the help that was needed. And various diseases were coming in and into the county and into the country, and they needed help with this. And the Reverend Rayner and others started this up, and from that grew all the divisions within Essex. We did have 10 at one time, but we now sadly only have 9. Morden Division was founded in 1945. There were others before that. Not always what they are today. Morden, for example, incorporated Wickham Bishops. There was a very lovely man. He was the vicar, the rector, of St. Lawrence Church. The Reverend Brown, he wrote a book about bees. He was a beekeeper himself, and it was called The Bee Melody.
The Bee Melody. That's a lovely
name. Very rare book, quite hard to get hold of, actually. I'm very fortunate to have a copy. And I find it particularly interesting and pertinent to Morden. He talks about the troops on, I believe it's OC Island. Mm. And he also talks about the lime trees that have since died leading up to Bradwell. And he refers to various things in and around Morden. And he had influence. And so we've had over the years quite a few people, a few beekeepers from the Morden area, which is nice. We're building on those foundations. And it's interesting speaking to some of the older residents, rural residents in Morden, and I might drop in this name, Brown, or the Reverend Rayner from Haseley, and they talk about them as if it were yesterday. They know them.
Good.
And it's lovely.
Yeah, lovely. Mm. Jean, I must ask you this. Have you ever been stung?
More than enough. It is thought by those that are not beekeepers that these wonderful state-of-the-art suits will protect us from stings, but they don't. If you can imagine a sting, a bee sting, rather like an electric carving knife, it has three parts to it. The centre part is serrated. This bee stings because conditions are not right for them, for me to interfere with them. It may be that the weather is stormy. The bees do not like being looked at in a storm because every part of their body is covered in hair, including their eyes. And like us, they get static. So if I'm taking off the roof, moving their furniture around inside, how would you feel? And so they're going to defend. It's not that they're being vicious per se. If I'd gone to them the day before and the weather had been right, they might not have done it. But quite often, I have to do things on a particular day. I have been stung. I have been stung through my own carelessness sometimes, maybe through being a bit rough sometimes. I have mentored, and still he comes out with me, a gentleman who, although he's been with me for 5 or 6 years, he never uses a smoker. He's so tall he has to kneel in front of the hive, and he takes out frame after frame after frame. And that man, I doubt, has been stung more than 3 or 4 times. Mm. He is so slow, so patient, and so careful with them.
And when you've had a sting, how do you deal with it?
Well, you don't go running round the apiary, although there's a temptation. The best thing to do is to flick the sting out, even if it's in the clothing, because there's a venom sac at the top, and when the bee stings, it leaves part of its body behind, and it can't sting again. It would die, and it will die painfully. So the idea is to flick that sting with the venom sac on the end, flick it out, with something that goes beneath the venom sac. Whatever you do, don't hold the venom sac and pull it out, because you're putting more venom in it. Some people, and even some beekeepers, have gone for years being stung and not being affected, and then suddenly their system says enough is enough, and they could become seriously ill to the point of death through anaphylactic shock. As a beekeeper, or even going to look at somebody else's beekeeping, you must make sure that you are not going to do that, that you're not allergic. You might not know until the last minute, but you have to be sure that somebody would know what to do, and precautions have to be taken.
It sounds as if you really have to respect the bees and their conditions.
Absolutely, yes.
Treat them with care.
Yes.
Mm. What happens in winter? How do you overwinter the bees?
I hate winter with the bees. I always feel it's a bit like pulling up the carrots. You know, you want to pull up the carrots to see if they're growing. And I feel like that with my bees, but they're best left alone. I feed them with sugar syrup in September, end of September.
Can I interrupt? How do you feed them?
Well, they have a tray that goes on top of the frames, on top of the brood box, a waterproof tray. And I mix up a solution of sugar syrup, 1 pint of water to 2 pounds of syrup of sugar, and that goes into the tray. Right. They have access from underneath, and they take that down and they store it, and that helps them to get through the winter. They don't hibernate as such, but they do go into a cluster shaped rather like a rugby ball in the hive. And they generate within the centre of that a temperature of about 90-odd degrees. And they gradually move around, you know, ends to middle. Mm. I have to make sure during the course of the winter that they're still okay. I will test the weight of the hive by gently lifting to make sure they've got enough food. I have to take precautionary measures by putting cages around the hives to keep the woodpeckers off. I have to put a mouse guard over the entrance of the hive to keep the mice out. Because whilst the bees are in a cluster, the mice say, "Well, hey," and might work their way in. The main problem is accessibility. Because some of my colonies are on remote sites, and with the heavy clay soil that we've got, even though I've got a four-wheel drive, I can slip and slide all over the place. And one of the apiaries that I have way out at St. Lawrence, it's fairly remote, there is no way that I can get to that apiary in the wintertime. I have a very obliging farmhand on the farm, and what he does, he takes out the big tractor, he fits up a seat on the front bit in the bucket bit, straps it in. I sit in the seat like the Queen of Sheba, And I have my minions, my helper, and my husband around me, and we bump across the fields. And one year it was so bad, the water levels, the water tables were so high. As we went across the fields, the tyres of the tractor, as large as they were actually sinking down. And we had water, I would say, a good foot up the tyres. And we got to the site, dismounted, did what we had to do with the bees, put on extra food, made sure that the mouse guards were on securely and they hadn't been, the woodpeckers hadn't found a way under the cages. And badgers, of course. Mm. Badgers love to use the cages as a scratching post. We did actually have some wild boar running loose one year. That was a bit scary. And the farmer phoned me and said, you'd better check your hives over here. He said, because a wild boar has been spotted. He said, I'm going out to shoot it, but that's another story. And then we got back on the tractor and bounced all the way back to the farmyard. Access can be a problem.
Yes, obviously. Yes. Oh, I like that. Going by tractor. So, Jean, looking back over the last 25 years in Malden, with all your many hives, it's obviously been a very good time for you.
We can honestly say we've loved every minute. We have quite a few outlets and we've had those almost from the beginning for 25 years. People in Malden, they're friendly. Mm. We enjoy living in Malden and I can't see us moving ever from here, to be honest.
And people enjoy your honey. And you've mentioned outlets. You have a lot of places, a number of places where your lovely honey is sold.
Yes.
In the High Street.
Yes. We've been with Bunting's for, how long? I mean, outlets have changed. We did supply Sally Green at one time, but, you know, she's changed. And there was a little green grocer at the top of the High Street. You know, that's now gone. That's sad. And we supply the Black Cat out a little bit further, and florists we supply, you know, Jane at the top of the High Street, Hyde Hall, places like that, we supply, and people knock on the
door.
And
your honey is called?
Malden Honey.
Malden Honey.
Yes, we've had people copy that name.
Yes, sadly.
Mm. Yes, but what can you do? You can't register a place name. And that's one of those things.
That's life.
Mm. Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Jean. That's been really fascinating.
I've enjoyed it.
I've really enjoyed listening to you. Thank you.